I'm going to talk about the one grandified model. This is a new proposal for the grandified theory, and I use the technique of technical, which is a dynamic of symmetry breaking, for the grandified theory symmetry breaking. And I promise, this is very simple model and pretty model. It's not nothing complicated. It's very simple. And this model is based on the work with Graham Quigley, and it is published by this FDA. Okay. This is my plan for my talk. Simple, just first I introduce what is grandified theory, and I present the serious problems that that model building, and present what that solution is. So that, and I present my model and summarize. So it's very simple. Okay, first production. We know standard model is a good model. This is the starting point of particle physics. Standard models. This is based on the gate theory. We have three different introductions. That is SC3 gate theory and SC2 gate theory, one gate theory. And the particle content in this model is quarks and leptons, which we know, and exponents. And that is a particle which is responsible for the symmetry breaking of the SC2 band C1 down to the electromagnetism. And this is a compact and beautiful theory. It's a good theory. But the standard model cannot be the perfect model, it cannot be the model for the everything. We know that there is an insufficiency in this standard model. The first, the clear signal for the insufficiency of the standard model, the empirical fact that is first neutrino mass. We know that neutrino has a finite mass of the order of the electron ball, and that is not explained by the standard model. Standard model prediction is still massless one. And also the baryonic symmetry, this is the cosmological side. We know that we are made of baryon, proton and neutron. And if there's no asymmetry in the universe between proton and antiproton and neutron and antineutron, we are not here. So we need to have some asymmetry between baryon and the antibaryon. The number of baryon has to be bigger than antibaryon. And that cannot be explained. I cannot use that might be a strong statement that there's no mechanism to generate that the asymmetry in the universe within a standard model. This is a very small asymmetry. This is just 10 to the minus 10. So a little bit excess of the baryon, but that is very difficult number to explain. And so we need something additional structure in the standard model. And also the dark matter of the universe. The recent observation says that many astrophysical evidence says the universe has a so-called dark matter. And you can see from the name of the matter, we don't know what it is. So it's some dark particle, which is not, there's no candidate for dark matter in the standard model. So we have to extend standard model to explain this, the existence of dark matter of the universe. And dark energy, again, this is dark energy. So this is not in the standard model. So we have several facts that says standard model has to be extended at some level. And this is a comment. This is the energy deposit of the universe. And 70% of energy is carried by dark energy, and 20% is carried by dark matter, and 4% is carried by baryon. the other of them almost 100%. So that means nothing can be explained by standard model in the universe. Therefore, we need something. So it's standard model, but it's not a standard model for cosmology at all. So we need to some extension to explain it cosmology, the universe. And there are also SFP problems, issues, that is so you, sometimes called natural problem. And one is hierarchy problem, why the weak scale, weak performance, that is like 100 GeV, 90 GeV, why that is much smaller than the typical scale for the gravity, front scale, 10 to 15 GeV, it's a big difference. Why that? And the problem is actually very sharp, because this 100 GeV is unstable in the quantum collection, by the quantum collection. So if you calculate the potential for the Higgs photon, that sets the scale, and W, and that gives huge collection. There's a huge quantum collection. So we have to cancel that collection by adding their parameter. So we need some fine-tuning, very fine-tuning in the parameter of the standard. So this is the problem. And charge quantization. We don't know the reason why positron has the same charge as proton or antimuon. And it could be.
Isn't that from an anomaly in the mixed gravity gauge anomaly?
Yeah, this can be explained, but this is not the anomaly. Muon can be 0.5 times electron charge, right? The generation, intergeneration, the anomaly is canceled. But, you know, we have three generations. We don't know the reason why muon has the same charge as electron from the anomaly cancellation.
I think it's depending on your position about generation, but they have to be identical and they have to be the same.
Right. And, yeah, right. So that, like, and another the strong CP problem, there's the one parameter in the standard model, which is it has to be very small, 10 to the minus 10. So we don't know the reason why this is so small. And also fermion mass, that is the electron muon tau, that is for the lepton, has a very hierarchical mass pattern, like 0.5 MeV, 100 MeV, and 1.7 GeV, and 19 GeV. So it's a very hierarchical structure. You know, I don't know why this is so hard. So
one other thing, standard model doesn't explain why there are three families.
Right, yeah.
Three families.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, that, so don't count. True, yeah. We don't know why there are three
generations.
Well, yeah. But it's not a problem. I mean, yeah. But standard model already includes three generations. So I identify that problem. So there are lots of problems. So lots of indication which says we need something extension of the standard model at some level. And we have now we have very nice picture for the beyond standard model, which explains part of the problems. First, the center of the picture is in a supersymmetry. Supersymmetry is the symmetry between fermion and boson. So every fermion has a partner that is boson, and every gauge boson has a partner that is fermion. And that so if you supersymmetric theory, that means if you introduce super partners in the spectrum, many interesting things happen. First, the supersymmetry has a very good feature for the ultraviolet physics. There's no so-called non-denormalization theorem. So the Higgs potential is stabilized by this symmetry. So it stabilizes the hierarchy. So this is a nice solution for the hierarchy. And also, we have a lot of predictions for the low energy experiment, like that in predict light Higgs photon, FCNC, that is flavor changing process, CP violating process, and also the fluid particle can be discovered as a CP right now. And also, this is also nice. Supersymmetry provides good candidate for dark matter. So it also gives a nice picture for cosmology. And the biggest, I think, interesting thing is the gauge coupling implication. If we calculate the gauge coupling, that is the strength of the gauge interaction, we have three gauge interactions. And that actually unifies at the high energy. So that naturally suggests the presence of grand unified cells. The three gauge interaction unifies into some one gauge interaction. And if you have grand unified theory, charge quantization can be explained because the U1 normalization, the charge is coming from some big gauge group. So that says the completely determines the charge. So charge quantization can be explained. And grand unified theory appears at 10 to the 16 GeV or so, very high energy scale, and that is a nice scale for the neutrino mass generation through that so-called seesaw mechanism. And if we rely on the seesaw mechanism, that provides a nice picture for the biomassivity generation scenario, so-called leptogenesis, so biomassivity can be explained. So it's really nice picture. It explains a part of problem in cosmology, and also a nice prediction for the experiments and stabilization of the weak scale. And most important thing is gauge coupling implication. It's very nice. Two lines always meet, but it's very non-trivial that the three lines meet at the same point. I'll show you the figure later. Right. So the sensible question we can ask now is there any way to see that grand unified theory at the LHC experiment? LHC experiment is a high energy proton-proton project. It starts in 2007 and 8, and that is expected to discover SUSY particle or light Higgs bosons. So it's a very nice experiment. So is there any way to see the grand unified theory at LHC? If the answer is yes, it's very nice. We confirm this picture. But the answer is very difficult because, first of all, we have two problems. We don't know the grand unified theory. The grand unified theory has a very big problem with the construction. And also, usually grand unified theory, as I said, appears at 10 to 16 GeV, very high energy. So predictions to the low energy experiment is not so, it's common that there's no prediction to the low energy. So there are two problems. But actually, these two problems is a nice combination. You know, the problem in grand unified theory requires some special mechanism for the model construction. So maybe some special mechanism can give us prediction. Then it's good. So it's a nice combination. Yes.
Yeah, you don't mention that grand unified theory is originally gauge predictions, but they were false.
Ah, the proton decay. Sorry, yeah. I should have said, yeah, right. But then, in a SUSY context, right, yeah, proton decay. But my question there, let's see.
So it's much harder to
get right.
The others instead. Right. I'm ready to see.
So now, what is grand unification? Grand unification is a very nice idea. This is done by Zhou and Grashow. First, standard model has three gauge induction, S3, 2, 1, and we have a fermion like this. And this is the quantum number for the fermions. And easiest unification we could think of, first, let's embed this one and this one to the same group. I think the easiest one is like this. Just embed the SU3 generator here and SU2 generator here. That forms a part of SU5 symmetry. So this is very easy way to embed. And let's think of this SU5. And this fermion has to be a representation in this SU5 gauge. So let's say that this 3 2, first this one, 3 comma 2, S2, 3, 3, and S2, 2, that requires two index under S2, 5, because it's 3 and 2, 5 fundamental. And the smallest representation is 10. So, and 10 has, as I said, we have 3 comma 2, but also 3 bar 1 and 1 bar. This is because this is 10 dimensional representation, we have 3. This is 6, 3, and 1. So we have extra particle. And good, we have 3 bar 1 and 1 1. This one UC and EC. So we can embed that. Now, the rest of them, B, C, and L, this is actually perfect representation for 5 bar embedding. So as we can see, all the fermions can be embedded in 10 and 5 bar. It's a very non-trivial thing. 15 degree of freedom is embedded to, can be embedded in 10 and 5 bar. And a further non-trivial thing is this combination of 10 and 5 bar is normally free under the SU5. So it's really consistent. And related to that, this gives the correct hyperchurge that SU5 has one more U1 factor which commits with this one, and this one, this generator, this generator, that should be identified to this U1. And that U1 generator determines the charge for these fermions, and that is correct. This, at first sight, this is some meaningless number, but you know, if we embed to the SU5, this is determined, and that gives correct hypothesis. So as I said, because this hypothesis is determined, that means this becomes the explanation for the charge computation. So this is a nice feature.
Can I resist you on that point a little more again? Because the equivalent of E pluses and mu pluses is the same thing, that they have the same, two generations have the same hypercharge, right?
Right.
And if they didn't, then the neutrinos wouldn't be electrically neutral, so you're really stuck with that in the standard model anyway, I would thought.
Right, yeah. Sure. So that is just a specific problem. You know, the muon could have been different charge.
That could also be true in the SU5. You could have the generation is the same, right? Within one generation, you're nailing down the charges. Mm-hmm. But then we agreed that gauge gravity anomalies would also nail down the relative charges between electron and proton. And in the comparison of electron to the muon, it sounds like there's no progress because it's just in both cases.
No. It's a very there's no other candidate. I thought that's completely done.
No, then you didn't get the meaning of triplet versus the double. You didn't have that, and then all the interactions wouldn't work, and you wouldn't have thought it was a theory of the world. You didn't have a very good direction right now. So, but in the aesthetic, my understanding of the aesthetic issue was that there was a choice, given that you've got the data right, there was a choice that you had to make. Why are these charges the same?
Right.
But it sounds like that choice for the mu case is really the choice of the neutrinos are neutral, which is something that's sort of built into any model anyway. And in the other case, for the
neutrinos are neutral. No. What I'm saying is normalization. I mean, this ratio is determined by anomaly. But it could have been just multiplied by 3 for the second generation and multiplied by some factor by the third generation. Right? It could be.
That's bring up all the strong and weak interactions, right? That's in standard model, if I start just using random temperature charges for the generations, then I just get it wrong because I don't get the electrically weak interactions, right?
Right. So that's why it's proper. Why it's safe. So that's.
But you can say the same thing here. Even in the SU5, if you just chose the representation wrongly, you get all the interaction problems, and you have the same problems.
No. If you embed. No. Well, why is that? U1 is uniquely determined because U1, only one U1 in the SU5. So U1 normalization is completely determined by this SU5 normalization.
Let me ask you
about
later on.
Because
hours of this, but it's just going to take too long probably to sort it out.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I think it's clear that, yeah. And gauge coupling mitigation. first, this is the gauge coupling learning of the standard model, and it doesn't meet. But this is 1/2 gauge coupling square, or it's 3-1, but it already indicates something. All of them are going to the same direction in the standard model. So I think some modification gives. So I think this is already suggesting that it's a sense of grounding by itself. But if numerical doesn't work. But if it's super symmetrized the theory, let's say, this is the picture. I didn't plot from here to here. What I did is put the experimental value and calculate the beta function and let it go. Means completely, perfectly, up to several percent. At the 10 to the 16 GeV scale. So it's very beautiful picture. So it really strongly suggests the indication of gauge group to some larger data.
In this picture, we only observed half the number of particles. So you've introduced a lot of extra parameters into gauge of freedom to get this result.
Right, I put the 2B particle should be appear here at the TED because it is motivated by hierarchy program. So 2B particle spectrum has to start at the TED or 700 GeV to stabilize the potential. So that sets the scale for the 2B particle contribute to the gauge coupling. So the above that scale, it's completely supersymmetric.
What is the supersymmetry rating? Is it 10 TED?
Oh, then 10 TeV, 100, that doesn't change so much because it's log function.
So it's a log function.
Yeah, that's not so sensitive. Actually, that improves signification a little bit.
Does signification depend on which extensions, which supersymmetry extension?
This is so-called minimal SUV extension. So, yeah, it's just...
What if it was not minimal?
Well, there's no motivation to do that, but right, yeah. Of course, if we add more represent more particles, if that transforms under complete multi spread of SU5, like if we add 5 and 5 representation of SU5, it doesn't change. But if we add, for example, one just hard particle, that only changes this one, and screw up the indication. Yeah.
I suppose, I think those results are obtained using the minimal subtraction renormalization scheme, right?
Okay, this is just one loop calculation, so it doesn't depend.
The interesting thing is that the beta functions are only independent of the scheme to one loop. Now if you go to higher loop, they become dependent on the scheme. So
right.
How do you know that you can't always choose some odd scheme that will make them completely annoying?
Oh, there's one motivation to choose a scheme. Because this is SUSY theory, we have to preserve SUSY, right, in the calculation, the regularization. So that is the one way that is called dimensional reduction scheme that gives a sensible answer to the gauge coupling. But at one loop level, there's no scheme dependence. So, and this is just one loop level calculation. So, there's no scheme dependence.
Okay, if you can make it worse by an arbitrary choice in two loops, maybe we should test the one that doesn't go to the kind of
right, so the dimensional regularization is the most sensible way to calculate.
No, it's not the method of the regularization, the renormalization scheme.
They don't change your speed, you're also changing the value, the input values that are measured at the Z mass. Because those are inferred from experiment, and so you have to do that consistently. So, I haven't done this exercise you're asking, but I think that might just, hopefully that scheme dependence will cancel. You see what I'm saying? Because the initial values, the starting point, it's under the two, that's also scheme dependent.
Right, yeah.
No, I mean, if you know that, if you knew that there is a gradient criteria, then I suppose that it just has to be no matter what. Mm-hmm. Right? But if we assume we don't know whether there is one, then it's not a question. One has to show something like what there is.
Are you going to go ahead and show us the gradient criteria?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
These are
things
we
can
argue about for
15 years. Thank you. Okay. So now, yeah, I have to pass. What's that? So I showed the beautiful point of the grand unified theory, multi-unified perfectly and coupling actually unified with the data. So there is a problem, big problem, in the model construction of the grand unified theory. First, you know, matters are perfect, but what about Higgs bosons? Higgs bosons are SU2 doublet particle, and we know that there's no two-dimensional representation in SU5 group. So we need to extend the particle content. The standard model Higgs requires colored partner of Higgs, that's called colored Higgs, to embed this 5 representation, for example. So we need new particles, so-called colored Higgs. And if colored Higgs is there, if colored Higgs is lighter or very heavier, that screws up at gauge coupling limitation because, you know, that contributes to the beta function. So colored Higgs mass has to be similar to the gap scale, 10 to 16 GeV, whereas the standard model Higgs boson has to be very light, near the masses compared to the gap scale. And, you know, in a SU5 symmetric limit, those have the same mass because in the same mass spread. So gap symmetry breaking should split those two mass states. So this is the doublet structure split. And so what's the problem is that this is difficult to achieve that splitting in a model, in a usual, in a simple model. For example, the gap symmetry breaking can be done by the Higgs mechanism, just into this adjoint representation. It's just traces 5 times 5 matrix, and if you put the bare bright piece, that breaks down to the standard model of this group. And that then can be given by this potential. If you put this potential, this is a vacuum. We have actually three vacuum, SU5 symmetric vacuum, and SU4 times U1 vacuum, and standard model. And if nature choose this vacuum, standard model appears in a Lorentz. And so to split the doublet and triplet, we have to have a coupling between this sigma, the adjoint particle, and also this Higgs particle in the super potential. So the mass term for the Higgs mass is like this. The first bare mass term and also the mass term from the gut breaking. And if we calculate the curved Higgs mass, this is just this one. And double Higgs is different. And we know this one has to be around gut scale, and this combination has to be less than weak scale. That requires 10 to the minus 14 degree of fine tuning. So this is a very this is a problem. We have to tune the parameter such that one of them is heavier than one of the other. So this is a doublet distribution problem. So it's not so easy to construct a model with the DRS distribution. And also proton decay. As I said, the quarks and leptons are embedded 10, 5 bar. And because we have, again, colored Higgs, the quark and leptons coupled to the colored Higgs by this Yukawa interaction. Okay, this is usual Yukawa interaction for if we take Higgs doublet part here. But for colored Higgs part, we have interaction like Q colored Higgs and quark leptons colored Higgs. So we can write down this diagram by 3 levels. And that gives a baryon number baryon operators, like this. And that induces a proton decay. Proton can decay by this operator, and that puts a bound for the curved mass scale, 10 to 17 GeV. And gauge coupling indication requires some range, like actually lighter than the gap scale. So So there's a discrete box situation. So the club Higgs is really a bad particle, which screw up the unification and also proton again. Use a proton. So we have several ways, possible ways to go to avoid that problem. And let's classify those by a mechanism of symmetry phase. We know three kinds of mechanisms for symmetry phase. One is just Higgs mechanism. And if we pursue this direction, actually SO10 extension of the model can give a solution to the double trip splitting problem. The 24 representation is embedded to the 45 representation in SO10, and that is allowed to have zero components here in the bed. This is 10 times 10 anti-symmetric matrix. So that can, if Higgs couple to this one, then Higgs photon couple to this one, the doublet part can be matrix. So this is so-called Dimopoulos-Wieczek mechanism. But still, model construction is not so easy to have a good model. For example, proton decay is still a problem. And also, the second way to break symmetry is explicit breaking, just break symmetry by hand. So usually this is, unitarity is the issue, because if you break the symmetry by hand, the scattering amplitude grows at the S, and the unitarity bound is this breaks the unitarity of the theory. But it is pointed out that if we construct an extra-dimensional model and break the symmetry by boundary function, for example, Higgs is living in this bulk of space, and doublet Higgs has Neumann boundary function, and hard Higgs has bigger boundary function, then the hard Higgs doesn't have a zero massless mode, but Higgs has a zero mode. So we can get doublet Higgs. So this is the way of getting doublet Higgs. This is a five-dimensional. And the third way, which I want to pursue, is the dynamical symmetry. This is also a famous way of breaking symmetry. That is, introduce strong interaction, gauge interaction, and SU5 arises as a part of the flavor symmetry of this G, and after G confines, the gauge interaction confines, SU5 is broken down to the standard model. It's very similar to the chiral symmetry break in QCD. It just breaks the symmetry by the condensation of quarks. So this is the model. And in this model, actually, Higgs boson, the light Higgs boson, appears as a light mesons, the massless mesons. And there's no zero mode for triplet Higgs. So we found a very pretty model in this country. And actually, this has a very interesting prediction for LHC. So this is my proposal. And maybe this second and third option is connected by the ADS CFT correspondence. But you know, this if ADS, the extra dimensional picture, can be maybe actually same as in this picture, dynamical symmetry breaking. The higher excited mode of the Carl Higgs, for example, corresponds to the Kaplan-Klein model in this Higgs boson. So maybe this is really good. But, you know, usually this kind of model doesn't have any prediction to the LHC, but we have a prediction in this model. So it's a nice model.
What's the point?
So
you
want to
break the principles of supersymmetric models and two things. We haven't seen the lightest supersymmetric particle.
We haven't seen it.
So this tends to suggest that you have to increase the threshold for supersymmetric break. And you have to see the
right, yeah.
And it also has to the higher dimensional operators in these models force photons.
Right.
So it's been suggested by a kind of analogy Markets and Harvard recently that you have to put the supersonic equation up to thousands of
teams. Not the
and you have to introduce anthropic principles to explain orientation.
Well,
what do you think about that?
I think Haskell is a very strong, too strong argument for that. Right. First of all, proton decay is safe in my model, for example. It's fine. And 2D breaking sector, of course, maybe you are thinking the flavor and CP violation is too big in user, in a generic supersymmetric breaking pattern. I mean, that forces the 2D breaking scale high. And that pretty much depends on the 2D breaking mechanism, which we don't know. So I think too radical to say it's you have to put the Suzy breaking scale up go up to a very high scale. It's not true.
You don't know.
John, this is none of what it's showing us.
It is. So it has to be
no supersymmetry here at all.
Well, yeah. In this transverse, no.
It is coming.
Right, you know, gauge coupling unification is motivated by Suzy, so we are always assuming Suzy. Well, okay, so maybe, so the first, okay, maybe I should present model. So, the model is, this is the model. We introduce SP4 gauge theory as a strong gauge interaction, and SP5 as a global, I mean, the subgroup of the global symmetry of this SP4 gauge interaction. And we try to gauge the SP5. So that's it. Very simple. It's just gate a vector like this. Six favor SP4 theory, and quark and lepton appears as just a singlet of SP4. It's like leptons in the standard model. And we have three dimensions. And Higgs sector is like this. Just six favor SP4. And this one actually becomes a Higgs boson in the end. This 4 is 2 plus 2. This breaks the symmetry down. The condensation of this Q and Q bar, the quark in this SP4 breaks the double symmetry. And we need this other T2 or T2 to avoid weakening our anomaly SP4. So this is the theory. Very simple. Nothing more than that, I promise.
So when you say that the H plus H bar is in a T?
Yes.
Does that mean that the T's are going to bind with the Q's to make the hits?
Right. In some sense. So as you see, there's no hard hits. So we can completely avoid double triple splitting problem by just throwing out the hard hits. But still SP5 is missing. So theory is just SP4 times SP5 and QQ but condense and that is SP2-1.
So there's no color
if I take the TQ bound state. Oh, yeah, that becomes massive. We can explain it later. In a composite point of view, that there is a cloud Higgs, but that is massive and wouldn't force proton decay at all.
So just this is a model of SP4 plus SP5
gauge
variance.
Right.
Fermions in the multiple
situation
and no scalar fields.
It's Suzy model. Yeah. Otherwise, there are no unification. So all of them are chiral multiplet of Suzy, n equal to 1 Suzy.
There's no
Higgs
model, right? You're
trying to say that. Right. There's no Higgs multiplet in the SP5 side. Higgs multiplet appears from this SP4 gauge.
And
the SP4 not the SP5. The diagonal subgroup of the SP4 and also the SP2-1 in SP5.
Is there a complete classification of the SP4?
Right, because SP4 is very strongly inductive. So the, I will show you later, but for the limit, it's the 4 gauge coupling problem and the infinity, that's the investigation. So, I mean, okay, this, which I plan to explain. Well, I will show you later, actually, the gauge coupling investigation. I'll show you later. Okay.
You shouldn't worry about learning how to get started late.
Oh, okay.
Don't rush yourself.
All right. Well, how much time do I have?
What do you
need? Any. Great. Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Okay, so this is, let's talk about this symmetry breaking of this theory. It is Suzy theory, so we can control the strong dynamics. We know that what happens. So we can write down first super potential for Q and Q bars, the mass term and higher dimensional operators, dot dot. And with this super potential, we have three kinds of vacuum. One is SA5 unbroken vacuum, that is just Q bar condensation is zero. And the effective theory becomes SP for one flavor, because five of flavor are just gone. So the flavor is just P1 and P2. And SP for one flavor theory is known to have runaway super potential from the non-partable dynamics, and this vacuum is actually unstable. So this vacuum is gone in quantum mechanics. Great. And this is also unwanted vacuum, SA5 down to SA4 times C1. We need it SA5 times down to standard. And in this vacuum, the length of Q is 1. So the effective theory is SP for two flavor theory. They still have runaway super potential. So that this is unstable. So this vacuum is also gone by quantum mechanics. And now the wanted vacuum, SA5 down to SA3 to 1, this is the maximum length of Q because of the SP2 difference. The supersymmetric diffusion restricts the length of Q to be less than 2 or 2. And this vacuum, the effective theory is SP4-3 flavor, and this is known to be stable. So our vacuum is uniquely chosen in this model. It's a nice sign. And spectrum is like this. First, at the gap scale, which is the scale for the wave of Q, the wave is given by the balance of these two terms. So this is of the order of square root of the geometrical average mean of small m and bigger. This is the gap scale. This is a 10 to 16 GB. And we also have a particle which have mass of the order of m in Q bar mesons. That is this kind of particle. And T2 gets mass, we assume T2 gets mass by this stuff. This is just, you know, this is meson, this is just mass stuff. So T2 gets mass. And also massless particle. And massless particle is just MSSM. So the particle content is really good. Massless spectrum is just MSSM. So this is what we need for gauge coupling. And if this M, the capital M, is the most natural scale for capital M. Capital M is the coefficient of the higher dimensional data, is Planck scale. So if this is Planck scale, this has to be 10 to 16 GB. That means the small m has to be 10 to 14 GB, a little bit lower. So this threshold contributes to gauge coupling communication a little bit. And that is actually bad. So what we need is this capital M has to be similar to the gap scale. Let's see the gauge coupling. Gauge coupling is given by, this is a three-level from the region, FE5, and FE2 times C1 come from both FE5 and C4, so there is this from the region, right? So for gauge coupling, if gauge coupling with C4 is very big, this is going to zero. So gauge coupling is naturally obtained if we assume the gauge coupling at the gap scale is large. So that means the SP4 is strongly coupled. Gauge coupling is naturally appears. So it's a nice combination. And this is very.
You believe that that formula was derived in your case?
This is trivial.
Yeah. So you know that formula is still true. The conclusion of that term is negligible. Seems to rely on G being large, in which case you don't know that the formula is true.
Well, right, yeah. But, you know, this is purely phenomenological. This is just, we can calculate that. Of course, we don't know the higher order, but we examine the higher order G4, and that actually, you don't want to discount, which we don't know. But the general picture is the same. I mean, it's hard to. But it's a just calculation of gauge coupling in low energy. So it's just MSSM contribution. We can write down this formula anyway. We don't know this one, but this one we know, but we don't know this one. But we can write down like this. And we know already at one loop level this is big enough and that screw up the initiation by 5%. So what we need is this scale, and this scale has to be degenerated. That means that this small n and that scale and big n, and also the coupling has to be big at the coupling SP4 has to be big at the gap scale. So that means dynamical scale has to be also similar to the gap scale. All that scale has to be similar to 16. So it looks like a coincidence problem. We need to tune again into the scale. But actually, this is not a coincidence problem in my model, because there is very interesting things happening. That is CFD. Actually, our theory is just SP4 fixed flavor gauge theory. This is known to have a conformal fixed point in an infrared. So what happened is that at some scale, the theory lands into the infrared fixed point and draw. And if that scale is in between, the gauge coupling is always stopped. So it's fine. So it's not a coincidence problem. And moreover, large anomalous dimension of the QQ bar method gives an enhancement of the coupling of those two. Those two in low energy, and it naturally gives a large coupling in low energy. For example, the mass parameter lands as like this, minus one, and this chapter end lands linear, so it's enhancing low energy. So, for example, if we take the capital M at the Planck scale to be Planck scale, that's a natural assumption. And if there is already CFD at the Planck scale, what happens is the gut scale M is gut scale. It's linear, yes. So it's a kind of obvious. M runs linear, so the suppression is always the scale of our interest. So at the gut scale, the coefficient is 1 over M. So 1 over M gap is, again, naturally obtained. And the parameter which set the gap scale, 10 to 16 G, is this small n. And this small n has to be gap scale at gap scale. So at the Planck scale, M is a little bit lower because it's enhancing buoyancy. So at Planck scale, it's like 10 to 15 GeV. So it's a really natural explanation for the light-hand neutrino scale. This is the scale of our model, and light-hand neutrino doesn't last. So light-hand, okay, neutrino mass is explained by this seesaw mechanism like this. And if you put the number which is observed, then the light-hand neutrino mass scale has 10 to 14 GeV. So it's close. So it's a nice explanation for the light-hand neutrino mass. It's a little bit lower than this.
Those guys are
singlet
under SU5?
Right, yeah.
They were in the fuse?
No. Those are, light-hand neutrino is a complete singlet under any Higgs. It's Higgs symmetry.
I guess what I'm asking is, if I take the field content that you wrote down in the very beginning, the T's, the Q's, and
uh-huh,
the
right.
Does that already contain it, the right-handed neutrino, and you have to add
no.
to the fields?
We have to add. And also very interesting things happen. CFT also enhances the Yukawa coupling. See, the Yukawa coupling actually becomes higher dimensional operator because we don't have Higgs in SU5. We have to link this SP4 and SU5 by this Q. And that gives full tire super field. So that requires that turns out to be higher dimensional. And for the top floor, what we need is the gut scale. The 1 over mu at the gut scale has to be like 1.5 times m for top floor. But again, CFT enhances this coupling in low energy. So at the Planck scale, what we need is just 5 over m Planck. So m Planck subplus operator is enough to explain this large top Yukawa coupling, even though this is higher dimensional.
Related question, so that you've got this region where the SP4 coupling is basically flat, so it's like a walking.
Uh-huh. Right.
At the same time as the SP5 coupling going
from there. It's just part of a degree.
Right.
Part of a degree. It's just logarithm.
I mean, what also happens in the grand unified theory is that there's so many fields above the unification scale that the grand unified coupling just takes off like a rocket. It becomes strong. Almost immediately above the
unification
scale.
And
does that happen here? Or?
You are talking about the resonance of the.
I'm saying that people normally follow the running up to the unification scale, but in a grand unified theory, you then did the unified coupling above the unification scale.
Oh!
There's so many matter fields that typically.
Great, yeah.
Crazy.
This is very nice feature. This is as you see, this is very simple model. So SU5 works actually still asymptote free. So, or asymptote non free, but it doesn't grow up.
That's better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Could be. Yeah. So, simple.
So the main thing I wanted to know was if I went to the line of the hole, do I have enough room to take advantage?
Right, yeah. Right, that's true, but it's okay up to Planck scale. So now I have a prediction to the LHC experiment. Yeah. Well, first, maybe I should comment on some proton decay. First, proton decay is gone because Kalkitz is gone. So there's no danger for the Kalkitz medium proton decay. But actually, what we found is non perturbative effect regenerates the proton decay operator, dimension 5 proton decay operator. But that is easy satisfied because this is non perturbative effect, so it's suppressed by very high power of dynamical scale, and that is safe. So that's just a brief comment.
Why is the proton not decaying compared to all the other radio plants?
Oh, first.
There has to be a decay to the X part.
Oh, sorry, yeah, dimension 6 operator. Okay,
yeah.
Gauge boson, that is, that happens, but that is known to be difficult to observe.
Right.
But But dimension 5 decay is dangerous, more than the 4. So, but that dangerous operator is killed in this model. There's no such operator.
Right. Because of the
SP4. Because there's no power case. Yeah. So, yeah. We can see that double triple splitting is obviously done by just adding kicks, not power kicks. And that's the model. So, proton kick is gone. Yeah, Carl Hicks is the bad part for the gap model building, but that is gone, so it's okay. No problem. Now, there's a nice prediction for the LHC. This is a gauge enormous. It's a mass of the super bottom of the gauge boson. And because, you know, SU2 times C1 coming from the mixture of this SU5 and SU4, so the gauge enormous coming. Gauge enormous for SP2 and C1 coming from also SP4 of this amount. And this is one loop minimization group invariant quantity, so plus the whole. And so in usual gap theory, we don't have this entry. So all the combinations, this equals this. This is a combination. But in our model, we have this contribution. So there is a modified gauge enormous relation like this. Gauge enormous appears not to unify, but still we have a relation. So it's a nice feature. And this is a nice sign for this ground unified theory, for this kind of ground unified theory. And brief comment on the ADS picture. Maybe, because our theory is CFD, maybe ADS dual, there's an ADS dual. And there's a very similar model, a phenomenological similar model, that is this one. There's a Planck plane and God plane, the five dimensional space time and two planes. And the SU5 is broken down to the standard model on this plane. And because Higgs boson appears as a composite particle, so Higgs is leaning there, here, but no power Higgs. So this is similar to the proposal by Hebbica and Matra. So our model is very similar property, a very similar property as this Hebbica and Matra. So maybe you are. But CFP side can say the uniqueness of the rank 2 bucket. In this picture, we can choose any boundary condition here, but if we think of where is non-partable defects of the SP strong gauge reduction, that our bucket is unique, and also special gauge non-oscillation appears. That needs some information on the strong lens. Okay, let me summarize. Okay. Summary, we successfully removed the card case. We don't have card case. So we solve all the problems associated with card case, double triple splitting and propagating. So phenomenological, very good. And CFP also helps the naturally large coupling at the gap scale for SP4 because it's conformal, and also enhancement of higher dimensional operator helps the threshold is pretty small. And the interesting relation happens for gauge enormous, so that might show the evidence of the model of the LHC. Thank you.
Could you show your prediction again? So it's one relation amongst the three.
Right, yeah.
But you don't predict that all three of them are lined up to receive the LHC or.
Right, yeah. So we can measure those quantities at the LHC if we discover. So if he observes two, we can predict one.
Sure, sure, no, no. But it's consistent with your model that all or some of them are too heavy to receive VLAC.
Oh, if that is the case, we don't have any predictions.
Right, so you only have one relation between the three.
Right.
But is it still an up or down? I mean, if this is not seen, is your model false?
No, because, you know, this can be zero. We have two parameters. If this is zero, yeah, so, and it also depends on the mechanism of the Suzy breaking.
So I'm trying to understand, I mean, if you use the word prediction, usually prediction means it is not seen,
yeah.
It is false, right?
No, we can already evade that by using some. We can put the excuse for that.
So does your model, in the sense of if it's not seen, the model is false?
It's not necessary for me.
Does your model make any prediction, any real prediction?
Well, no. Okay. We don't know where. We. You mean, except for this?
Well, you're saying if that's not seen, your model could still be true.
No. What I want to say is if this is seen, our model is most likely the model for the GATT model.
And if it's not seen?
If it's not seen, we can still excuse. Because, you know, if.
Then the first part is not possible.
Can I ask it in a slightly different way? So this is a prediction, you know, before you get to the super symmetry breaking scale. But when you go through that super symmetry breaking scale,
right.
Does that change the prediction, or is there some room there?
Right, so if gauge mediation or something, if that. Yeah, so if Suzy breaking happens at very low energy, the gating of mass just come from, I mean, there's no information for SP4, so there's no influence. So this prediction is just gone, you know, because we have to assume gravity mediation or some high energy mediation mechanism, otherwise, it's not prediction. So, anyway, well.
Can I ask a related question? If you said the proton decay is gone, does that mean that if you look at the massless sector, you have an accidental R symmetry? Or an R curve?
Yeah, Peltz Quinn symmetry we have. Right.
Discrete R curve. So would the phenomenology of dark matter and electrons be the same?
Yeah.
And what dimension does that symmetry work? Is dimension 5 and then also dimension 6?
Dimension 6 is already there. But dimension 4, 5 is fine.
Just a quick question, yeah. There must be another gradient of criteria that will kill dimension 5.
Right, yes.
Supposed to dimension 6. That's just not really.
Right. To kill the dimension 5, it's very difficult phenomenological argument. There is a difficulty for that phenomenological. First, okay, to kill the proton decay, we have to really kill this operator. Right, dimension 5.
Right.
So that requires some symmetry, some quantum charge for this one. And that is possible, like if you put the charge 1 for the all of them. Right? Then what happens is that the Yukawa coupling requires Higgs to be charged also in this case. So the curve Higgs cannot get, okay, so we have H and H bar, two kinds of Higgs multiplied. Both are 5 and 5 bar. And both have charge minus 2. So we can't get curve Higgs mass in this, by this charge because it's forbidden. So how do we avoid dimension 5 operator? It's very elegant. We introduce infinite tau of curve Higgs. First, we have 5 representations, and 2 of them constant massless. And that requires some partner to get mass with them, right? Then to get mass. But that cannot be this one. So we have two kinds of 5 and 5 bar. And that also gets masked with different particles. And that requires additional particle, this one. And this has to be also massive. So that requires one more double, that one more 5, and that has to marry with this one. So we need actually infinite tower of 5 and 5 bar in the spectrum. And in our model, that is done by the infinite tower of the high, the excited mode in CFP. So, and in an extra dimensional model, actually, this happens for the Hartzsprung mode of the tower. So, this is the way to avoid the proton decay. With giving a mass sample analysis. So we need here infinite tower of particle content that is done by Hartzsprung mode or this kind of QCD and some resonance.
It's not easy.
Not easy, but this is easy. It's just breaking of symmetry. Yeah.
Well, that's great. We should give you some time for a bathroom break before the next talk starts at 11:30. So thank you.
No, actually that.